Hello, and welcome to this podcast from the Oxford Institute for Energy Studies.
Hello, and welcome to this latest in the OIES podcast series. My name is James Henderson, and I am Director of the Energy Transition Research Initiative at OIES. Today, I'm joined by Jonathan Stern, who's a Distinguished Research Fellow at the Institute. We'll be discussing the theme of his latest paper, which was published on the 10th of January 2022, which is entitled Measurement, Reporting and Verification of Methane Emissions from Natural Gas and LNG Trade. Jonathan, welcome back to the OIES podcast series.
Thanks very much, Jim.
So let's start then, getting straight into it. I mean, you know, you and I are both at COP26, and methane emissions was one of the major topics with the signing of the Global Methane Pledge. So can we just start with a little explanation about why methane emissions are so important and, you know, as we discuss climate targets, why this has come to the top of the agenda?
Well, methane emissions are really important because methane is the second largest contributor to greenhouse gases after CO2. And it's a much more powerful greenhouse gas over a short period of time. But really, what has also become clear is that it's increasing in the atmosphere much faster than CO2. In fact, it's the fastest increasing greenhouse gas. And reducing it, particularly reducing it from fossil fuels, is the fastest and lowest cost means of reducing the rate of climate warming. And so many of the measures are long-term, very expensive, very complicated. By contrast, reducing methane emissions is really the easiest and fastest way to go.
Okay, that's interesting. So the focus of this paper, though, is on emissions from gas and more specifically on from gas trade. Why have you decided to focus on that particular area?
I think it's important to focus on gas trade because people think about gas as methane, which it, of course it is. And also, it's a relatively focused on compartmentalized set of issues. I could have focused on oil, where in many cases methane emissions are reckoned to be larger than gas. I could also have focused on coal. But in fact, it's much easier to describe the chain between upstream and the customer for natural gas trade than it is for those other fuels. So that seemed to be a partial but an important place to start in talking about methane emissions.
And what about the domestic sort of gas trade? Why are we not focused on trade rather than kind of domestic production and consumption?
Because for the big importers, particularly in Europe, domestic gas production is becoming a vanishing commodity. I mean, now we see even the Dutch exports in Europe, really the Netherlands becoming an importer. We see declines everywhere in the UK, in continental Europe. Norway is the only substantial gas producer where exports and production have stayed up. Everywhere else is declining. So increasingly, we're looking at an import-dependent continent. In Asia, for LNG that we might get onto a little later, we already have massive dependence on LNG in Japan, in Korea, in Taiwan, and growing dependence in places like China and India. So I felt it was important to focus on the trade and not so much, although many of the observations I've made apply to, domestic production of the fuel.
Okay, fine. Well, you've also mentioned, just as we started, that the potential, the importance of methane emissions, but also the potential for their reduction and potentially at low cost. Can you just expand on that a little bit about what is the art of the possible, if you like, over the next decade? What would you hope that we could achieve in terms of reducing methane emissions?
Well, we've got projections and targets from both the International Energy Agency and the UN Climate and Clean Air Coalition of reducing methane emissions from fossil fuels by at least 75% by 2030 in comparison with 2020. And this, in fact, has been greatly helped by the huge increase in international prices for natural gas over the last year. 2020, of course, was a different story. But at the kind of prices we've seen in 2021, and in fact, even at roughly half of those prices, virtually all measures that you would take to reduce methane emissions would be cost negative. In other words, by reducing emissions, you would actually, or the companies involved would actually make money exporting more of the fuel and wasting less of it.
Which slightly begs the question as to why they're not doing it already. But is there an answer to that?
Well, I think there are a couple of answers in the countries I've looked at. For quite a lot of exporting countries, they also use a lot of gas themselves, and their domestic prices are very much lower. I mean, in countries like Qatar, Russia, Algeria, you've got prices, never mind the international prices, but you've got domestic prices at less than $2 a million BTU. So for those guys, it probably isn't worth it if they're selling gas on the domestic market. But anyone selling gas internationally and who has the potential to sell more gas internationally, it's just an absolute no-brainer to reduce emissions of methane and make more money from them.
Okay, so I mean, let's come to the EU, which is leading the way on much of the environmental policy at the moment, and as you've mentioned, is an increasing importer of gas. The EU methane regulation was announced last year. What's that setting out to achieve?
Well, it's really a follow-on from the methane strategy, and the idea of the strategy was it reflected the point that I've made a little bit earlier, that actually most of the emissions from gas being used from within the EU come from imports. And most of those emissions from imports come from outside of the importing country, the EU member states. So the idea was to try and reflect in some way the methane emissions which were embodied in imports into the EU. Now, the strategy had a very ambitious proposition of actually setting a methane standard. When we got to the regulation, which was published, as you just said, over a year later, the methane standard introduction has been delayed until the end of 2025. And what I'm trying to show in the paper is this is because it's very, very difficult to measure these emissions unless you've got a framework in place. Nobody has a framework in place at the moment, although that's starting to come into view. And the EU was clearly afraid that if it tried to impose something, it would just be subject to an international legal challenge.
So we've got a situation there where we're waiting for a standard to emerge by 2025. We've got suppliers right now. I presume that there are negotiations are underway on how measurements should take place. I mean, what's actually happening with Europe's suppliers of gas? How are any kind of standards being developed?
There are undoubtedly conversations going on, but we don't really have access to the detail of those conversations. The problem with this subject is that once you start to scratch the surface, you see a number of different things, which is that if you take the six major suppliers of natural gas and LNG to Europe, which comprise about 90-95% of the gas that Europe imports, you see very, very different situations in each of those countries. Some of those countries have multiple export routes, which are very different from each other. And this makes the whole question of how do you, first of all, measure and then report and verify emissions from those countries and each of the export supply chains. How do you verify that once they reach the border of the EU? And that is what has to be negotiated. My concern is that if we wait until the end of 2025 before we can put something in place, we have no chance of reaching the target of 75% reduction by 2030.
So can we just talk a bit about the technology behind this then? I mean, you know, what are the means of measuring methane emissions that are currently being used? As I understand, there are bottom-up and top-down. I mean, how do they work and how do they get reconciled?
So the bottom-up measurements are ground level. So essentially, you just monitor all of the emissions from the assets you have at ground level. But that's not good enough because those instruments don't see emissions from much higher up not just in the atmosphere, but in the sky. For that, you need drones, but you can also use aircraft and satellites. Now, satellites have come on a great deal in the last couple of years and are going to make much more progress in the future. But there is a big danger of overselling satellite observations because, unfortunately, satellites cannot observe emissions of methane over water, in other words, offshore installations, over snow covering, and in the tropics. And what that rule really rules out is all of the Norwegian production, most of the Russian upstream production, all of the Nigerian production in the tropics, and fields like the North Field in Qatar, which is offshore. For that, you have to have drones or aircraft, and you have to try to reconcile as best you can the ground level with the top down, with the aerial observations. It's complicated, but it's getting easier as technology improves.
So what's the EU expecting to happen then? I mean, the countries to come to it with their sort of methane emissions declared, and to kind of put a number in front of them for each export route. And how is that then going to get ratified, verified and certified? I mean, what's the EU expecting each country to do?
Well, the regulation, in fact, puts the onus on importers to collect this information. What it doesn't say is what happens if importers are unable to collect the information because the exporters will not cooperate with them. And that's a kind of important issue. And I think what that says is that there will need to be negotiations between importers and exporters. Importers, because they are going to be paying whatever charges are imposed for methane on their imports. And exporters, because many of them will want to put forward their own estimates of emissions and will have to demonstrate that those have been verified. But here we have another complexity, which is that the EU methane strategy, one of the things that it did was to create the International Methane Emissions Observatory under the UN. Unfortunately, many of the exporters and indeed major gas markets around the world have not joined the observatory, and they also have not joined the oil and gas methane partnership, which is the kind of gold standard of methane emissions reporting and verification. So we have a complicated situation where the EU is trying to create a standard and make it globally applicable, but many important countries have not yet signed on to that. And you would have to imagine there would need to be bilateral negotiations with both exporting companies and, of course, governments, many of whom own the exporting companies, before we can make significant progress to get really global agreement on how these emissions should be measured, reported and verified.
Because presumably this only ultimately works if everyone is being transparent and making their data publicly available. I mean, I know a number of companies have been claiming commercial confidentiality as one reason for not providing the data so far. And I guess countries are probably doing the same thing in terms of strategic confidentiality. That presumably is going to be an issue that has to be resolved.
I think there's a couple of different levels here. Firstly, I think you're going to get countries like Russia and companies like Gazprom coming forward and saying, listen, guys, in Europe, we've been doing this for 30 years. You don't really know what you're talking about. Here's our data, and here's how we agreed and reconciled it. And you may very well get European authorities questioning that. And that is a big problem. A different problem is countries like Algeria and Nigeria, which appear to have no measurements in place, and will probably say something to the effect of, if you want us to do this, then you need to pay in order for us to have these measurements in place. And I think that can be resolved. Then you have a separate problem with, for example, the United States, where you have a huge number of different companies, you have vast numbers of production sources and everything else between there and the liquefaction plant. So you each country has its own discrete problem on how you're going to implement these kind of standards and how you're going to get the government of the country to accept those standards. Now, once you get to particularly international oil and gas companies, and this is the oil and gas methane partnership companies that I talked about earlier, and some other frameworks that we can talk about in relation to LNG, you come to the confidentiality problem, where a lot of those frameworks allow for the data to remain confidential, although the data which are reported to the international observatory must not be confidential, but the observatory will not be allowed to release it itself without some permission from the companies. Now, I personally don't understand the issue of confidentiality related to emissions. I don't understand why the greenhouse gas emissions related to a particular set of production and trading assets should be confidential. What the industry tends to reply is, no, no, it's not the emissions that are confidential. It's the fact that from the emissions, competitors can work out what our production levels are. I find that completely unconvincing, and no one has managed to persuade me otherwise. But you can see that all along the supply chain, we have different sets of problems that have got to be resolved before we can get to what we need, which is publicly available measurement, reporting, and verification of emissions.
Let me have one last question on the kind of the upstream side of things. You mentioned in the paper that Cheniere had done a study of its 2018 targets, I believe, which tries to address this question of multiple suppliers in the US upstream. Can you just talk a little bit about that and how much of an effort that was, how much of a benchmark that might be for reporting of emissions in difficult countries like the US?
And I think it's a very impressive study, and it's the first of its type. There are a couple of authors from Cheniere, there are some academic authors, there are some consultancy authors, but it's a publicly available academic document. So there's the article and there's over 100 pages of supporting documentation. Now, you can ask many questions about, yes, but for example, what about the fact that Cheniere knows where 58% of its very large purchases come from, 42% it buys from traders, so it doesn't know where they come from. And there's a whole lot of other really important details about, you know, do we know about processing? Do we know about storage? Do we know which pipelines the gas goes down? All of this is important detail. What is important about this study, though, is that it sets out this is the kind of methodological approach you need to follow if you want to know how to calculate the emissions from US LNG. And remember also, there are 6 different terminals in the US now, shortly to become 8. So every terminal will be supplied from different sources through different pipelines coming through a different supply chain. But now, at least from this documentation, we've got a way of saying, okay, so now we understand what needs to be done. Then, of course, the question of, is this data accurate to a standard that we would accept? But it's a really valuable step in the right direction.
And what attempts have been made going further downstream to look at emissions from specific transport routes, whether that be pipelines or shipping?
I mean, the pipeline guys haven't done as much as one might have wanted, but this is partly because you've got some very difficult commingling of production sources. In other words, only with some of the Russian pipelines can you actually trace the molecules back to a field. For the others, in, for example, Norway, you've got commingling of gas in the shore terminals and also in the riser platforms. So the best you can do is to measure a commingled stream of gas from a number of different fields. So the other really complicated question is when you get to LNG and you've got to look at the particular ship that the cargo is loaded in. What's the size of the ship? What's the age of the ship? What's the efficiency of the ship? Does it run on boil-off gas? Does it run on diesel? You then get into all kinds of shipping complexities, which again, as if we didn't have enough complexity, is another level of complexity for this subject.
And then I guess you've also got the regas terminals, which I presume is, you know, similar to the liquefaction in terms of individual sites measuring their emissions, and I guess the trunk pipelines and distribution pipelines in the importing country as well.
Yes, but actually this shouldn't be such a big problem, because when you move past the border of the importing country, the buyer and the buyer's regulator is in charge of this. So basically, it should be entirely possible, and indeed they probably have to do this for EU ETS requirements, it should be entirely possible for them to measure emissions within their countries. It's the external problem that we've been talking about that is the real difficulty. Once you get to the regas terminal and beyond, then the buyers know where the gas is going. They know whether it's going into distribution companies or power plants, and they ought to be able to measure that much more precisely. But in fact, that's for me the reason why, for that segment of the supply chain, it should be the buyers and the regulators in the specific country that are in charge, that are responsible for this, as opposed to the upstream or exporting companies trying to estimate emissions from the full value chain.
Okay, well, I think we should probably come to a topic now, which I know gets you quite exercised, which is the definition around carbon neutral LNG. And I note in the paper you come up with a new definition, which is greenhouse gas verified LNG. Can you just talk us through your problem with carbon neutral as a definition and why you've chosen this new one?
Okay, so let's just split it down. I mean, we are mostly not talking just about CO2. So carbon is the wrong description of what we're trying to measure. We're trying to measure greenhouse gases. So that's CO2, it's methane, it's also nitrous oxide and some other smaller components. But CO2 and methane are the most important components. Then neutral refers to the practice of using offsets to compensate for the emissions from the various cargoes. Offsets are a complicated subject that we might come onto in a moment, but the issue really is what we really should be talking about is the greenhouse gas emissions from a cargo, and then whether the buyer or the seller of that cargo chooses to try and offset those emissions, and what is the volume of offset which is required to compensate for the total greenhouse gas value of the cargo. So that's why I prefer the term greenhouse gas verified with or without offsets for this, rather than carbon neutral, which I think begs a whole lot of difficult questions of credibility and measurement.
Okay, so basically what you're saying, I think, if I understand it, is you've got to be able to define what the emissions are in their totality from the LNG value chain before you can offset them.
Absolutely.
Okay. So let's just briefly touch on offsets then. In order to make the cargoes neutral, as you've defined, or as you've said, we need to have offsets. I guess all the same rules about measurement, reporting and verification would apply to offsets as they do for measuring the emissions from the cargoes.
Absolutely. I mean, there is a whole lot of other debates about offsets and the question of whether they should be used for anything other than so-called hard-to-abate sectors. But let's leave that aside. First of all, we've got to know what we're talking about and therefore what we're offsetting. And having done that, we've got to look at the credibility of the offset which is being used, and that brings us into registries and a whole lot of other important and difficult detail. But the most important thing, it seems to me, is that if neutrality is being claimed, then we have very definite and verifiable evidence to say, okay, you knew what the emissions were, this is how you calculated them, you know what the offset you used, and this we can demonstrate that you have actually retired those credits.
Okay. Let's move on again to another difficult topic, which is you mentioned earlier that, you know, the EU and other regions, I guess, might apply some kind of tax or penalty for methane emissions. But there's a potential that will be related, I guess, to the carbon price. And so therefore, I presume that methane measurements will need to be translated into carbon equivalents. Now, that's an issue, I know, and from your paper brings out, because the different global warming potentials of methane have a different timescale. So what are your thoughts on that?
Okay, this is a fiendishly complicated subject. And I must stress, there are very respectable arguments on both sides of this, each side of the argument. So in general, the earliest COP, which set up the global warming potential of methane, used a time horizon of 100 years. It didn't say those were the only time, that was the only time horizon, but it basically said this is the time horizon that we think most governments will be using. And indeed, they have used that. Now, when you take the time horizon of 100 years, the global warming potential of methane has increased steadily from around 25 to around 30 in the last two or three assessment reports. However, what we didn't anticipate, was, which has happened in the last couple of years, is the adoption of 2050 targets. Now, 2050 is now 28 years away. In other words, a much shorter time horizon than 100 years. And when you take a 20 to 30 year time horizon for the global warming potential of methane, you come to somewhere between 65 and 85 times as powerful as CO2. So if you're going to equate the charges for CO2 to carbon prices, then and you have 2050 targets, which almost every country does, should you not be using a time horizon which is commensurate with 2050 rather than 2120? And of course, if you were to use 65 to 85 times, then the charges for methane would get very high very quickly, particularly as we're seeing now much higher carbon prices in regions of Europe. So that is going to be a big issue, because if we're going to change the GWP of methane, then to some extent, you could say, well, 196 countries have got to go back to the IPCC and agree that we're going to do that. And until governments do that, companies are certainly not going to agree much higher global warming potentials, because obviously that will cost them a great deal more money.
So lots of things to negotiate and to discuss. Obviously, the EU is pushing forward, or has pushed forward, with its regulation. But what timescales are we talking about? I mean, you know, to 2030 is now only 8 years. I mean, what sort of timescales are we talking about for these negotiations? What do you anticipate happening in the next 12 to 24 months to get this topic moving forward rather faster?
Well, one of the recommendations that I make in the paper is that actually companies and governments need to engage with certainly the six major exporters to Europe in 2022. Because if we go through what I would call the usual international legal negotiation process, it'll be 2025 before we get anywhere. And as we've all said now, this is urgent. This needs to be done by 2030. If we take the next 3 or 4 years to negotiate, then we have no hope of meeting these targets, which really should be achievable given the fact that there's a lot of incentive to do it from a cost perspective. So my feeling is that there needs to be negotiations, and those negotiations need to be handled in a persuasion rather than an ultimatum fashion. In other words, what really needs to happen is that importers, their governments, and Brussels needs to approach exporters by saying, right, we see this problem. We think this is the right framework. Can we talk about that? And can we talk about what can be achieved quickly that we can agree quickly? And I think in that spirit, there is a chance, at least, that many of the major gas and LNG exporters will come on board.
Okay. I think one last question there. I mean, you mentioned oil and coal earlier in the conversation. I want to particularly ask you about oil, given that it's produced with gas and flaring is one of the sort of, and methane slip in flaring is one of the major issues, I believe. Do you think this topic is going to become increasingly relevant for oil as well over the next few years?
Absolutely. I mean, it's going to become relevant for all fossil fuels, but for oil, particularly because most major gas exporters, gas importers actually import between 2 and 5 times as much oil on an energy basis than they do gas. And we know that the flaring issue means that we're seeing calculations that up to 10% of the flare is vented methane, not 2%, as we've always assumed in the past. And particularly the flares that have been observed in the United States in the Permian sometimes have much higher levels than that. So flaring is a tremendous problem. And for countries which are importing oil, they're going to have to go through something of a similar process under, in fact, the methane regulation in order to be clear what level of methane emissions are associated with their oil imports. That, as I think I said at the start, is going to be more complicated than gas because the oil chain, because of refining and a number of other issues, is actually a more complicated chain than gas. But this is a really big deal, and I think it's going to become ever more important as the decade rolls forward.
Okay, thanks, Jonathan. Well, I mean, we've come to the end of our time now. It's been a fascinating conversation about what is, as you've said, a really, really important topic and a topic that needs to be addressed in the relatively short term. I know you're going to be following it for us over the next few years, so we'll look out for more papers from you on this topic. For those who've enjoyed this podcast, please do go to our website at www.oxfordenergy.org, where you'll find Jonathan's paper. Again, the title, Measurement, Reporting and Verification of Methane Emissions from Natural Gas and LNG Trade. It'll be on the front page of our website. So Jonathan, thank you very much indeed to you again. Thanks to everyone for listening. Please do stay healthy and goodbye.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from the Oxford Institute for Energy Studies. You can find other podcasts, as well as all our written research, on our website at www.oxfordenergy.org. If you would like more details about our oil, gas, electricity or China programmes, then please contact us at information@oxfordenergy.org.